Verse 5. I hope I can get my throat cleared up. Verse 5 in Luke 17. And then also just the middle part of verse 1. Luke 17, verse 1, middle part of the verse. It is impossible but that offenses will come. As I mentioned last evening, many times these offenses are not intended. I don't believe people just want to offend somebody. And the apostle said unto him, increase our faith. I just found out a few minutes ago who that fellow was that I couldn't hardly remember where I'd seen him. But over at Petersburg, Indiana, we held several meetings in that area. Brother Snyder, would you please stand and pray God's blessing on the word? Amen. Offenses, that which hinders many, many times in the church. A lot of times not intended, but they come through misunderstanding and sometimes through carelessness and sometimes through ignorance. A number of years ago, there was a problem that arose in one of our churches. And it came from the source of the pastor of the church. All the problems do not come from the lay members. There was an issue that came up at conference. And this issue was thoroughly discussed. And then it was brought to a vote. And more than a two-thirds majority passed on this matter. There was a preacher that pastored one of our churches that did not like it because this matter was voted on and passed by the conference. And he went back to his church. He should have had a delegate at conference, but if I remember that year, he didn't have one. He went back to his church and carried some slanted news. Now, it's not just school kids that can carry slanted news. I really don't know all that he told his people, but it sure stirred up his church. And it wasn't too long, just a few weeks passed, we got word that the church was planning to leave the connection. They were going to vote out. I called the pastor and talked to him. And at the close of the conversation, I asked him if we could come on a Wednesday night, I believe it was a Wednesday night, and have a special service. And I'd like to meet with his people and talk with them. And I said, I'm going to bring the conference vice president with us. He agreed to it. We went to that service. And just before, the week before we went, I was in my study. And I had read through the Old Testament many times, but I came to Joshua chapter 22. It was the first time that this chapter just jumped out at me. And I got my pen and I began to write. And actually I used what I'm going to give you tonight, at least a portion of it, I used it during that meeting when we met with the church. We met with the people and we didn't do anything but tell them the truth. We opened up for questions and discussion. And there were many, many questions that were asked. And as truthfully as we could, we answered every question in every situation. Finally, somebody spoke up and said, Brother Newton, said, is our church the only church that's troubled over this that came up at conference? And I said, to my knowledge, there was not another church in the connection that took a negative view of it. And you know, after we had discussed and the vice president had had his say, and after we discussed it, all those people turned just wholeheartedly back to the conference. Why, they said, we're not going to leave the conference. And the pastor met with me outside the church. He said, Brother Newton, now he was awfully quiet during that meeting, so I don't know what he had told them. But he met with me and he said, Brother Newton, I know we have a rule in the connection that we're not to resign between sessions of conference. But he said, I may have to resign my church. He said, would you give me permission if I have to resign? I said, I certainly will. 3 or 4 weeks passed by, and he contacted me. He said, I'm going to have to resign. And he did. He resigned and left his church. But I want to give you just, and I don't know why the Lord laid this on my heart, but this is what I felt He pressed to my heart. So I'm going to give you this, and I'm going to give it to you mostly in manuscript form. I look at this congregation. You look wide awake to me. There's only about 3 people that I'm going to give permission to sleep tonight, and that's Brother and Sister Montgomery, Robert Montgomery, and their daughter Carolyn. I'll tell you, they've been up since early this morning, and they have worked hard all day long. If I see them napping, I don't intend to wake them up. But I want you to listen carefully tonight as we sort of give you this in story form. How to avoid destruction, division, and disaster through misunderstanding. Now that's a big subject, but I believe the Bible answers this. How to avoid destruction, disaster, and division through misunderstanding. A number of years ago, when we were over our school there at Salisbury, we had a turnover in our staff. Almost every year there was a turnover. I couldn't understand that. But I heard Brother Eugene Henry preach one time when he also was over a school. And Brother Eugene Henry said to the staff members, he said, if I hear any criticism out of any of you, criticism toward one another, he said, come Sunday, he said, I'm going to preach it from the pulpit. He meant what he was saying, too. I'll tell you, that quelled a lot of the criticism. So I sense that when Christian people work together real close, especially in a learning center, day after day, friend, if you don't keep prayed clear through, and if you don't keep divine love flowing in and flowing out, it's awfully easy when you work close with one another to see the other fellow's faults and shortcomings and failings. You know it's a lot easier to see the other fellow's than it is your own. So I told them in the staff meeting, I just told them what I've told you. I said, if you don't keep prayed clear through, you'll become critical of one another. And I said, that can really cause for division and cause for turnover in staff. So I said, if I hear any criticism out of any of you toward one another, I said, I'm going to take you to the individual. It wasn't but about 3 weeks after that. One lady, she had a tendency to sort of be critical. She came to me, just took me aside out in the dining area of the building. She said, Brother Newton, I just feel like I need to tell you something. And she started telling me something, but it was something to do with the supervisor. And I let her go for just a little while. And then I looked at her, I stopped her, looked. I said, by the way, I said, have you been to the supervisor about this? Well, no, no. She said, I didn't feel that was necessary. She said, you're the administrator of the school. I just felt like you ought to know about it. I said, well, follow me. She said, where are we going? I said, we're going into the learning center. I said, I want you to tell me once again what you've just told me in front of the supervisor. Oh, no, Brother Newton, no, she said. I said, oh, yes. I said, just come right along. And she followed me into the learning center. And we stood before the supervisor. And I said, now tell me in front of him just exactly what you told me out here in the dining hall. Now, she wasn't nearly so emphatic and wasn't nearly so enthusiastic as she had been out there. But she finally got it out. And when she got through, I looked at him. I said, what do you have to say about this? Oh, he said, Brother Newton said, no problem there. And then he told his side of it. And as he told his side, I saw her neck turn crimson, clear up to her ears. She was so embarrassed because it was all a misunderstanding. But instead of him being to blame, after he told his side, she was to blame. You know, I was so glad that I took her into the learning center in front of the supervisor. I was so glad we nipped that in the bud. Because if I hadn't have, she would have gone to another monitor and maybe another supervisor. And it wouldn't have been long because she had had a little click going against the supervisor there in the learning center. You know, I've found out through the years that God's way is the best way. I became pretty popular in our connection. Especially if there was criticism, and even in our school, if an offense arose or there was controversy and there was criticism, they said, you better not let old Newton know about that. Said, he'll take you to them. So, friend, it solved 90% of the time, if you could ever get them to the individual, it solved the problem. Now, in Joshua chapter 22, a real misunderstanding, a controversy between Israel and Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh came up. And I want you to know before we get started that these were all God's people. They were brethren. You see, in their conquest of the land of Canaan, they had come on the east side of Jordan, and they had confronted King Jahaz over the Amorites, and they had confronted Og, King Og, which was over at Bashan. And they had conquered their land and possessed it. And so you remember Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they requested from Moses, because they liked that territory, they liked that land, and they requested that they might be able to settle east of the Jordan River. And you remember, friend, that Moses gave them permission on one condition. He said, you can have the land on the east side of Jordan. He said, if your men will leave their families and their homes and their cattle and their corrals and their villages, if they will leave all of that and go with the rest of Israel into Canaan and drive out the enemy and possess the land. They said, that's the condition. Do you know they were true to their word? They promised that they would when it came time to take possession of the land of Canaan. They went right with the men of Israel. And friend, it took 7 years. They had 7 years of war. But after the major wars were over, now in this 22nd chapter, Joshua, he's blessing these men. And he's sending them back to their wives and their children and their families. And he told them, he said, now you fellows divide the spoil. He said, I want you to share the wealth. Share it with those who stayed at home and who stayed by the stuff. Now, on their way back over, they came to the crossing where they had crossed the River Jordan. And there they built a large monument for everyone to see in the shape of an altar. Actually, they patterned it after the tabernacle altar. They didn't go back in the brush to build it. They built it right out in the open where everyone could see it. Now, evidently, there was somebody from Israel that was trailing along, but anyway, they saw what was taking place. And it wasn't long till, at least what they thought, it is spread all over Israel. You say, why do you believe that, Brother Newton? Because just a little later on, it said that Israel had an army rallied at Shiloh and was ready to go to battle against their brethren. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing how some people, friend, all they need to do is just hear or maybe see, they can hear one word, and then lo and behold, if they can't tell you the whole story from beginning to end. There's some people like that. Well, this is what caused the great misunderstanding. You see, after word got back to Israel, they interpreted the altar as an altar of rebellion, an idol altar. Instead of a true tabernacle altar to God, it was an idol altar to offer burnt grain and peace offerings on, thus in rebellion to God. So they declared that they had sinned. Now, this was all assumption. They assumed that they had sinned. They surmised that they had sinned and would soon bring God's wrath on all Israel as at Peorah and also when Achan had sinned. And so they brought their army. They never went to inquire up until this time, but they were ready for battle. You know, when we became conference president, we were living there at Salisbury, and our conference office was at Concord, that's just west of Knoxville, and had been there ever since the conference came into existence, I guess. And it just so happened that two of my boys worked at the school. School wasn't able to pay them enough to live on, so they had to pick up extra work. So they built these little miniature barns. And the lumber company had a lot of lumber laying around that was some of it warped. And so they told me if I wanted that lumber, I could have it. And I hauled it back to our place, about three pickup loads. So while the boys were building these little mini barns, I asked them one, I said, would y'all build me just a little, and they built it in the shape of the mini barn, build me a little place back of our place. I said, I'd like to have a place where I can put my books. They put shelves all around the walls and just a place to get away so I could study and seek the face of the Lord. You know, it wasn't too long after that. I went back over to Tennessee in our conference, and there was a family that had moved. They had moved from Tennessee over to our grounds to place their children in our school. And it just so happened they lived right across the road in front of us. And when I got back to conference, someone walked up to me and said, well, said, Brother Newton, I understand you're moving the conference office to Salisbury. I said, what? Yeah, I said, spread all around. Said, You're moving the conference office over. Why, I said, I've never even thought of such a thing. Well, they said, that's what's being rumored around. You know, we had a revival meeting there in Knoxville with one of the pastors. And really, we were a little bit late in getting started. It took about 5 hours to drive from our place to Knoxville. And we had everything loaded up, just getting ready to leave at 1 o'clock. I figured that would give me at least 6 hours, you know, to get there, and I felt I could get there in time for the service. So we were just getting ready to pull away, and the phone rang, and I went back and got the phone. The pastor said, "Brother Newton," said, "I understand you're not going to be here tonight." "Why?" I said, "We're planning to." "Oh," he said, "is that right?" He said, "I just got a phone call and said they told me that if we were planning to have service tonight, that I ought to get some other preacher to do the preaching, that the Newtons weren't going to be there." "Why?" I said, "I planned all along to be there." I said, "I'm sure we can be there unless some terrible trouble comes up." I said, "We planned to be there." He laughed. He said, I understand. I say again, all some people need to do is just see the tip of the iceberg. And friend, they can tell you its size and its density, and they can tell you how many Titanics it's going to sink. Let me say to you in pausing here just a moment, friend, this kind of stuff has wrought havoc and division in the Church of Jesus Christ over and over again. Just jump into conclusion about others before knowing or even trying to get the facts. You know, people who have a divisive nature, that bent toward controversy, the gift of sowing discord, even if they're very radical in their dress and their standards. Friend, their depth of Christ could easily be written on the side edge of a small piece of paper. God, give us a genuine people who will not be influenced by the rabble-rousers, who will not divide, who will not split, who will not attack one another, who will not subject the body of Christ to such suffering. Men who refuse to divide the body of Christ, and especially over gossip and hearsay rumors. Now listen to me. If war in this story had broke out, brethren would have killed other brethren because of gossip and misunderstanding. You know, really, in our holiness circles, over and over again, brethren have axed up one another. It's the bittersweet story of gossip and misunderstanding, the glory and the gory of the brethren. They chopped one another into pieces. Read the fiery denunciations, the ugly, the vicious things, the pamphlets, the letters piled on top of one another. All are evidence. So, after keeping their word, talking about Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, after keeping their word, leaving their families, and fighting shoulder to shoulder with Israel, being faithful in every way, they are misunderstood, falsely accused, threatened, and an army rallied at Shiloh to fight against them. But first, and scripturally so, a delegation led by Phinehas was sent. Thank God for the Phinehases. This delegation led by Phinehas was sent. And in this delegation, there were 10 high officials of Israel, one from each of the 10 tribes, and each a head of the clan or house of their fathers of the thousands of Israel. They went to inquire, to have a special meeting, to discuss, to make an effort to understand. And you know what? As a result of it, the misunderstanding cleared up. The false rumors were quelled. Let me say to us tonight, friend, this is why Jesus gave us the scriptures that I quoted to us last evening. He gave these scriptures so we could clear up our offenses, so that we could clear up our misunderstandings. That's why something as important as prayer is, Jesus said, your prayers will be stifled, they'll be hindered, unless you do what I'm telling you to do. And that's in Matthew 5, 23 and 24. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First, he said, be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Matthew 18, 15. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. Friend, this would stop 95% of the division and the controversy and the turmoil among us as church people if we would consider these scriptures and just do what Jesus said. You know, a few years ago I was asked to speak at the IH convention there in Dayton. They wanted me to talk on the home, and I did the best I could. Brother Sankey got up and opened the altar, and several people came to the altar after that service. The next day was a fast and prayer service at noon. And I had been down there praying and seeking the Lord. And then a brother that I knew real well, a brother that I'd known through the years, he walked up to me and he said, Brother Newton, he said, I want you to know I really appreciated that message last evening. He said, I was one of those that went to that altar. He said, Brother Newton, he said, I didn't know that my heart was so full of bitterness and unforgiveness until I went to that altar. But he said, Brother Newton, God's forgiven me. And he said, I want you to pray for my wife. You say, what was this all over? Well, this brother pastored a real nice growing church, and they had a lovely school. And I'll tell you, he and his wife had worked there and labored for years at that church. And it came time for the recall vote. They never entered their mind that they wouldn't be recalled. But you know, after the service, the brother came to them and said, I have some news, said, you're no longer our pastor. He said, what? He said, no, said, the church has not recalled you. Friend, it hit them so hard. He wasn't ready at that time to take another church. He didn't know what in the world they would do. He and his wife both got a job and went to work. But I knew what happened. There was some little trivial matter that came up in the church. And I say again, it's amazing how these things can snowball. And they didn't have any idea that this had gone around among the church people. And friend, if they would just have obeyed this scripture and met with their board and these people, they could have nipped that in the butt. But they didn't do that. They just assumed that everything was going to be okay. But they were voted out of their church, and it floored them. He said, Brother Newton said, for quite a while we had to drive by that church in order for my wife and I to get to work. He said, it got so bad, my wife couldn't stand it. Said she'd start crying and go all to pieces when we'd go by that church. He said, I had to find another route a long way around in order for us to get to our jobs. And he said, somehow bitterness and unforgiveness had slipped into my heart and said, Brother Newton, my wife's in worse shape than I am. Said, please pray for her. I'm just saying to us, friend, God has given us a remedy. We don't have to go go through a lot of the church problems and divisions that we go through if we would just obey this. Now notice the gracious reply of Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Notice what they said when they brought the issue to them. Why, they said, "We assure you by Jehovah, we didn't build this monument, this altar in rebellion. We didn't build this as an idol altar. This is not to sacrifice burnt grain and peace offerings on." They said to them, "May the curse of God be upon us if we did." And then they gave their explanation. They said, "We built it as a symbol. We built it as a reminder to God and Israel because we love the Lord. And so that future generations will not say, because we're on the other side of Jordan, we're on that natural barrier, or beyond that natural barrier, the future generations won't be able to say that we have no part in the Lord." And it said, "Your children may try to make our children stop worshiping God in Jerusalem." They said, "But it's a symbol to remind, to show future generations that we too may worship the Lord in Jerusalem with burnt offerings and sacrifices, and your children will not be able to say to ours, 'You have no part in the Lord our God.' If they say this, our children can reply, 'Look at the altar of the Lord, the monument which our fathers made and patterned after the altar of Jehovah in the tabernacle.'" It is a symbol of the relationship with God that both of us have. So the altar was named, listen, the altar of witness. It is a witness between us and them that Jehovah is our God also. My, what a wonderful explanation. Now notice the gracious response of Israel. Can't you see this crowd that had rallied an army, ready to go to battle, ready to fight their brethren? Can't you see them as they relaxed and laid down their arms? And I can see them as they took a big sigh. Oh, they said, "Now we know that you have not sinned as we thought." You see, this meeting that they had together cleared up the offense. It cleared up the matter, the misunderstanding. Friend, I don't know how to get it across to us. I say again, this is one of the hardest things for church people to do. To go to somebody that they think has something against them, or where there's a wall or barrier between individuals. Sometimes it's in the home. Sometimes it's between families. This is the hardest thing on earth for people to do, just to go and sit down and look them eyeball to eyeball and say, "Hey, we're trying to get to heaven. We're here for a meeting." This little incident's come up. We want to get it cleared up. And you know, 95% of the time, they'll clear it up if you'll just do what he said. Because about 95% of the time, the offenses that arise are due to some misunderstandings. But we're so slow to do this, and these things can snowball. And first thing you know, we've got brethren against brethren, sisters fighting sisters. We don't have unity in the church. Well, they said, instead, "You have saved us from destruction from the Lord if we had acted by waging war on our brethren through misunderstanding." Notice, then Phinehas and the 10 ambassadors went back to the people of Israel and told them what happened. Listen, and all Israel rejoiced. The disciples said, "Increase our faith." And brother, I can see them as they begin to shout and rejoice, and their faith was increased. And it says they praised God and spoke no more of division and war against Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. I want to say to us tonight, friend, the devil loves offenses. He loves for misunderstandings to arise among church people. He loves for misunderstandings to arise between husbands and wives in the home. You say, why does the devil love these things? Because he knows it's the only way that he can split God's people and get them at war with one another. And that's what happens so many times. You know, I went to I'm sure there's no division here. I say again, I don't know why I'm preaching this. I went to church sometime back, just had got there, and the pastor looked at me. He said, Brother Newton, I almost called you. Told you not to come. He said, we've had a division. He said, at least 30 of our people have walked out of our church. He told me a little bit about it. One man got a rumor going, and it went all around among the people. And if he could have gotten to it and gone and did what this verse said, it would have probably stopped that rumor. But nobody did anything, and it just kept snowballing until he said 2 weeks before he got here, 30 people walked out of our church. I went from there to another church. The pastor said to me, Brother Newton, said, man, we've had tragedy here. And then they had a real nice Christian school. He said, you know, in our school, said, just a couple of our young people got into it with one another and said they had a real argument over something. Now, if they'd have just let it alone, young people don't hold a grudge. They'll forgive. They'll be back laughing, playing, having a big time with one another in just a few days. But you know, the parents got involved. And boy, here was parent against parent. And parent, he said, Brother Newton, the parents got involved in this and said it kept growing. And said, he said, we just had 6 families. Said the parents pulled their children out of our school and they just left our church. Been so simple. If the pastor said, wait a minute, what's going on here? And call them all together and sat them down like Christian ladies and gentlemen ought to sit down and discuss the issue. But friend, that's the last thing we do, isn't it? We go tell everybody else. Get other people involved. And the first thing you know, what in the world caused that church to split? I went from there to another church, and lo and behold, they had just split before I got there. You know what that was over? It was over a power struggle. There was a young pastor, a young preacher had come in there to pastor the church, and he was full of zip and zeal, and boy, he decided he was going to get a bunch of young people and a bunch of children into that church, so he began to go out and visit, and he'd get out there, and boy, by Sunday, he'd haul them in. Man, he'd go back and get another load and bring them in. You know, some of the old heads in the church, they got upset about that. You know what they begin to think? They begin bringing these young upstarts in here. Why, they're not even settled spiritually. Won't be long. He'll want them to teach this Sunday school class, or they'll be taking our jobs. You say, oh, Brother Newton, things like that don't happen. Oh, yes, they do, friend. So just over a power struggle because they were afraid the young people were going to get our job, it split the church. I went on there to another church. And friend, I'm telling you, this is not funny, but you just about have to laugh about it to keep from going crazy. And you know what? This church, they were having a change of pastors. And some of the people in the church made the statement, oh, they just love this pastor. And they just said, oh, they said if our pastor leaves, said we're leaving. And another group in the church that didn't have that love relationship with their pastor, they said, if our pastor stays, said we're leaving. Let me give you some good solid advice, folks. Pastors come and go. That's why Paul warned that people were carnal when they get their affection set on some preacher. Preachers come and go. The church is in the community. It's the lighthouse. Don't hold on to the coattail of some pastor that may be on his way out and split your church. Stay with your church and the lighthouse in the community, because that's where you're going to be. And see the church move forward. Well, I'm going to quit right there on that line. You know, I'm aware that the true reason for division and the stated reason for division are never the same. Now, you study them out and you'll find that's true. Brother Paul Lucas told me one time, he said, Brother Newton said, a preacher came up to me, told me his name. He said he came up to me and told me that the Lord had given him a message on the church split. And he said, I've preached it three times and split three churches. Oh, my friend, we ought not to be divided as God's people. We ought to work out our problems the scriptural way. But you know, since the present splinters are having such great revivals, since we're getting so many people in, since we're seeing so many souls saved, since we're cutting down all the groves of Baal, I'll tell you what we need. We really need some more splinters and divisions, don't we? No, my friend, we don't need to be divided and split up. We need to get together. And we need to do our very best to work out our problems. I didn't preach this message, but I preached a message along this line in a certain of our churches. I didn't know it. There was a fellow in there. He was about 75, maybe a little older. He had had something against the treasurer in the church for a long time. And after I'd preached that Sunday morning, we just had the audience stand and we were going to dismiss. And that fellow stepped out now and said, wait a minute, Brother Newton. He said, please. He said, I've got something I've got to do. He said, should I do it right here in the church? Or I said, if it's something you can take care of outside of the congregation, I feel like that would be. He went over to the treasurer. He said, I want you to come. They went out in the vestibule. They were not there 3 or 4 minutes. Boy, they came back in. Her face was shining and he was smiling. He said, we got it all cleared up, preacher. We got it all settled. But I thought to myself, my, why do we let these things fester? Why do we let them go on and on when we could go to the individuals and clear up the offense? And then our faith could be strengthened. Oh, my. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we just follow the instructions that Jesus gave? Let me give you, I don't know, maybe I gave you these when I was here before, but some years back when there was so much strife and division taking place, and I saw the results of it, and I said, Lord, I said, would you just sort of show me the results of a church split? And you know, all of a sudden, the Lord just began to show, and I got my pen and I began to write. I want to give you 7 results of a church split that I felt the Lord gave to me just as fast as I could write them down. Number one, it separates good people. Actually, it separates God's people. You've seen people that have worked together for years. And then all of a sudden, there's the distrust and the suspicion and the broken fellowship Actually, a division builds walls and barriers between some of God's best people. And friend, if there's been a division, if you'll check it out, you'll find out there are exaggerated truths that get started on both sides. Number two, it causes some to turn their backs forever on God, especially young people. That's why Jesus pronounced woe upon them that offend one of these little ones. I saw a teenager when a division came and it tore up the school, tore up the church. One young person, just a teenager, young man, he made the statement, stomped. He said, I'll never set foot on those grounds again. So, friend, it causes some to turn their backs forever on God. Number three, it destroys what God is trying to do in the church and in the community. Friend, a unified church can accomplish much. But a division sets the church back for many years. Sometimes it never gets back to its full strength and power. Number four, it causes much strain, regret, and heartache among God's people. I'm sure you know it. I found it out. Stress from church problems can almost kill you. I was talking with a pastor not long ago. He and his wife came over to see us. He sat in our living room. He was right in the middle of a church division. Finally, he looked at me and said, Brother Newton, he said, church problems like this can kill a man. I said, they certainly can. Number five, it causes the enemies of the church to laugh and blaspheme. Can't you see the enemies out here in the darkness as they stand around and laugh when there's a church split and a division? They laugh in the darkness and say, I told you there's nothing to religion. Said, look at that crowd. Said, they can't even get along among themselves. Number six, it sets up barriers of unforgiveness and bitterness, which many will never seek to straighten up. Usually starts with just a little offense. And then if that's not taken care of, bitterness sets in. And then unforgiveness sets in. And then there's a grudge. And after a while, there's hatred that settles into a person's heart. And friends, I've seen some in the holiness movement. I mean, they dressed just as strict. They were just as faithful to the church. But I tell you, they had hatred towards someone. You remember what John said in John 3:15? He said, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. He said, and ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Friend, I'm afraid there's a lot of people right out of our churches that have let this thing progress rather than clear up the offense, rather than getting the matter taken care of. And after a while, just like the brother told me, he said, brother, I didn't know there was so much unforgiveness and bitterness in my heart. The bitterness sets in and the unforgiveness. And then the old grudge comes and then there's the hatred. And there's a lot of people that look like holiness people, dress like they attend church, they're just faithful. But friend, I'm afraid a lot of our people are going to miss heaven and go to hell because hatred got into their heart. And John said, you know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in them. Number seven, it grieves God's Spirit. He works when his people are in one accord and always striving to work out their problems the biblical way. You know, those disciples said to the Lord, increase our faith. He said, all right. He said, all you have to do is obey. Go to your brother. Go to your sister. Do everything in your power to clear up the offense. Tear down the walls. Just obey and then forgive completely. And he said, your faith will be increased. And it will, friend, it'll increase. to the extent you'll wonder, I haven't been blessed like this in so long. But thank God I finally went and got this matter cleared up. Can I ask us just about three questions in closing? Why is it so hard for us as holiness folk to humble ourselves? Why is it? Why is it so hard for us to back up when we find out we are wrong or have been wrong? Number three, why is it that we try to hide our own faults, but we want to expose our brothers? This happens so much. Don't ever forget, friend, you have faults too. You have failings and shortcomings. And so that alone ought to keep you from pointing out the faults and the failings and the shortcomings of your brother or your sister. Unless it's necessary. I found it necessary one time to point out a failure of a preacher. He went to a certain church in Ohio for a revival meeting, and this was a real good church, had a lot of good godly people in it, but there were a lot of men in that church that loved to deer hunt. And for some reason, this preacher, this evangelist they called in, he didn't like deer hunting. And one of the brethren in that church that was so close to me said, Brother Newton said, we couldn't. I said, he came in here and said he just raved against hunting and buying expensive guns and all this. Said, my, you could put it in the missionary work. And he said, some of our men in the church got under such conviction, said they actually sold their guns and... But you know, a few years after that, he had taken a church, and it was right close to the ocean. And I happened to be visiting in that area, and actually one of the brethren from this church, they were with me. And we decided, since we were this close, we'd go to see the brother. And we went out to see him, and lo and behold, he had a canal that he had cut up right to the back of his house. And he had a real nice boat. I tell you, you buy one of those boats that will go out there on the ocean and take, they're pretty good boats, pretty expensive. And he was bragging on his boat and all of his fishing equipment. He said, by the way, said, you brethren got time? Said, I'll take you for a little ride. I said, no, sir. I said, I don't think I have time for that. And I looked at him and I said, by the way, I said, my good brother here, I said, he let me know that you came to their church and said, you preach their guns away from them. And I said, now we come down here and find you've got a real expensive boat and you love fishing. I said, to me, that's hypocritical. You say, what did he say? He didn't say nothing. He hung his head. Friend, it's much easier to wade in on the other fellow's faults. But we have our own, and we ought to be careful, lest we become hypocritical in condemning somebody else in something that we're guilty of. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we'd just clear up our misunderstandings and our faults? I guarantee if you try it, it'll bring revival. Well, for some reason, I felt the Lord wanted us to speak on this. God bless you. Thank you for your patience. I see Brother and Sister Montgomery stayed wide awake, and I don't know whether Carolyn napped or not. I don't much believe she did. All right, let's stand together. Don't forget, tomorrow's Mother's Day.